You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000 and now on FM at 100.3 HD2.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
Bit of everything in hour number one. You heard from Matt Nagy and Justin Fields in their press conference today. Justin Fields will start against Cleveland. Andy Dalton is week to week. We've tried to stay positive, and Waddle doesn't want me to get angry about Matt Nagy's game plan.
Yeah, I think if you you're worrying about your anger level 2 or 3 weeks out, I think it's wasted energy. We can save that energy and put it together and be mad together at that point.
I'm walking arm in arm with you over Dalton in a couple weeks. Okay. Why I'm not walking arm in arm with you is stressing about Matt Nagy putting Justin Fields in the best position to win this week.
Well,
that should be one of the keys to the game, and one of the, if we talk about concerns about our team week in and week out and winning games, that should be your number one concern.
Of course, it's a concern. There's no doubt. They've got an opportunity to change the narrative. We'll see what it looks like Sunday in Cleveland.
All right, let's talk to Dan Wiederer. He does great work for the Chicago Tribune. He joins us weekly. He was all over the beat today, and he is on the Corona Hotline. Hi, Dan.
Boys, how are you doing?
We're doing good. Well. Were you surprised that, at least from a PR standpoint, after all the screw-ups on Monday, that they didn't goof around today and send out a Bill Lazor to tell everyone hide the fact that Justin Fields was the quarterback, that Nagy spoke on a day that he wasn't supposed to speak, and they just said, look, this is the way it is, and Justin's our quarterback?
Well, I don't know if I'm surprised. I mean, I was surprised on Monday because, you know, we go back to this whole Matt trying to interpret the question that he was asked and then claiming he didn't understand the question he was asked, even though he repeated the question he was asked. And you just ask yourself, like, aren't you supposed to walk into that press conference with like maybe 2-3 questions that you are absolutely anticipating? Yes. And have your answer planned out so that you don't stumble around and then create this mess that became a bigger mess, which then creates uncertainty in the outside world on whether you know what you're doing with this potential future franchise quarterback. And so all of that has created this unnecessary tension in a week that should otherwise be exciting, because you've got your number 11 overall pick going out to make his first start. You've got the opportunity for him to prove that he deserves to start for the long term. And the outside world is suddenly sort of wringing its hands and trying to figure out whether any of this is set up to be successful.
What do you expect the game plan to look like Sunday in Cleveland?
I mean, look, if you're doing this practically and you're doing this sensibly, you spend a lot of time on Monday, Tuesday, getting your heads together as a coaching staff and saying, what are Justin's gifts, right? And what does he do best? Okay, now let's marry those up with things in our playbook that we know he's comfortable with. And I think you heard some of it from Matt today. It's the process of trying to go back through training camp, find the concepts and the plays that you can tell he understands, right, and that allow him to play fast. And then, as you guys have mentioned, you have to take advantage of the gifts, which one are deep ball accuracy, right? That is a total strength of his coming out of college. And number two, getting him on the move and allowing him to put stress on a defense and then allowing him to make plays that aren't in your playbook, right? Sometimes it's going to be breaking contain, getting outside the pocket, and making a throw that was not designed. And so they have to find ways to set him up for success. I think we all sort of worry, based on what we've seen the last 3 years, that that's not going to happen to a high enough degree, and they're going to have to prove everyone on the outside wrong by setting him up for success and showing us what it looks like on Sunday in Cleveland.
Isn't it silly that after 2 full years of dealing with that with Mitch, that that's still a worry? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that shouldn't, this is a veteran coaching staff now, Dan. I mean, this isn't Matt Nagy in his first year. Like, shouldn't, he always says he tries to figure out the whys, right? That's one of his favorite, but he hasn't figured out any of the whys offensively.
No, and Sunday's offensive performance was disappointing, right? Mm-hmm. And so now we get ourselves in this cycle. Listen, they had 5 true second-half possessions. You take out the one at the end where they were running the clock out, and 3 of those started in Bengals territory. The total output in the second half of that game was 4 first downs, 83 yards, and 6 points, despite starting in Bengals territory 3 times in the second half, right? And being unable to put the ball in the end zone from the 9-yard line, right? These are all things that bring up that outside concern and that outside skepticism that they're going to be able to find answers offensively. They've got to figure out a way to do it. The week after this, they get the Detroit Lions. That's a defense that should allow you, as it has in years past with Mitch Trubisky as your quarterback, to put up points and have success. And so they have to find ways here in the next couple of weeks to develop some momentum, some rhythm, and some confidence both inside the building and from outside the building, because that stuff does matter to some extent, where you need to generate some positive energy. And you're right, Sylvie, it is silly that we still don't know whether they're capable of doing it with an offensive-minded coach who has now had his chance to work with many, many different quarterbacks.
Do you think, Dan, that they, I mean, just personal opinion, do you believe that they'd be better off if Matt Nagy would step aside and give the play-calling duties to Bill Lazor and just be more of a guy that runs the team,
right,
a la
oversee
like John
everything.
Harbaugh?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. And it's a good question, and it's one that I don't have great certainty one way or the other. And I think the thing that sort of leaves me, gives me pause at this stage of the game is they seem to be at this kind of fork in the road that they can't decide which road to go down. And the fork in the road to me is, what is the bullseye for 2021? Is the main goal to develop Justin Fields in a way that positions him to have the best opportunity to be a championship level quarterback as soon as possible, or is it to contend for a playoff spot in 2021? And it's like those old choose your own adventure books, right? You have to get to the bottom of that page and pick which page you're going to turn to next. And I think the Bears want to turn to both pages, and they risk this sort of dynamic of getting stuck trying to do both things and not really having a clear idea of exactly what their vision is for this season. And it gets complex. And I think this is the biggest conundrum that they face here this year, and particularly in the short term, is trying to figure out what they're okay with. Because if you're going to try to prioritize Justin's development, then you have to be willing to be more patient and live with more growing pains and be okay with many more mistakes than you otherwise would be. And I'm not so sure they're there mentally at this point.
There's another way to get to the point on what you're saying about choose your own adventure, wanting to do this, wanting to do that. I call it doing things half-ass, you know, halfway. Like, and I don't think you can accomplish anything by doing things halfway like that. We're going to dabble in Justin. We're going to dabble in, like, what bothers me the most is, and then you can answer the question about if you feel like they will go back to Dalton too. I want you to get to that. But what bothers me, Dan, the most, other, I will admit that Dalton will probably run the offense today better. He knows what he sees. He's a professional quarterback. He's never been a bad quarterback. And I'm fine with all that. But I also believe that A, Fields won't get ruined, and B, if he's good, and B, I want Fields to get all the resources put into him. I don't want him missing reps in practice. I don't want him preparing as just the backup and all of a sudden artificially putting all these resources into Andy. For what? What's the point of that? Like, let's go through the growing pains to get to the greatness with Fields. What's the point of running with Dalton right now?
So this is a great question, and you're a great member of the target audience, because with what your stated preference is there, are you okay living with a bumpier, ultimately more entertaining version of 7-10, 6-11 this year, if it ultimately positions you for better success up the road? Are you okay with that?
Yes, 1,000%.
Okay, so now you have to convince your brethren in the Bears masses to jump on that same bandwagon as you, and then you have to convince a coaching staff that fears for its job security to get on that bandwagon as well. And this is why I was talking to you guys back as early as the early summer about the lack of clarity inside the building on what this year is all about and what Matt Nagy has to do to retain the trust of the guys above him. That's Ryan Pace, that's Ted Phillips, that's George McCaskey, obviously. And so when you don't have clarity on whether the bullseye is winning 10 games and earning a playoff spot, or if it's more so, look, we identified our quarterback of the future. We're grooming our quarterback of the future. By week 18, if he looks like he is absolutely our quarterback of the future, that should be a success no matter what the win-loss column says. That is where this lack of clarity creates all this confusion and all this sort of angst, because you don't have a target. You don't have a bullseye to hit. And that's where this thing gets a little bit weird.
It's the
greatest point of this entire conversation. We can zoom in and look, but the zoom out. This is why this situation is so effed up, in my opinion.
Correct.
Because you knew that there was a chance heading into this draft, despite signing Andy Dalton to the free agent contract in March, You knew even at 20 there was a chance you were going to get a quarterback. You knew it. Why in the world, if you don't trust the guys that currently sit in their chairs, why would you give them another swing at drafting a guy in the first round? Like, this is why, Dan, it just, like, I feel like I'm chasing my tail at all times. If you don't believe in the coach or the coach is on the hot seat, you've already answered your question. You got the wrong guy because you're going to entrust that person into developing another first-round quarterback that you may have to give up other draft currency for, which is what they did.
The circle of suck, I've called it.
I was just going to say, Spilvey has a word for this or a phrase for this. It's called the circle of suck. And look, this harkens back to things that we talked about last December. Two things that we talked about. Number one, I told you that I really struggle with this organization's ability to either identify mediocrity or do anything about it when they have. And then we also talked about when they were sort of in the hunt, oh, by the way, we just snuck through the back door and got the number 7 seed in the NFC playoffs. I called that the 7 seed seduction because the whole point was you did not want that to be mistaken for some sort of meaningful achievement, and yet it was. What did they tell you all offseason? We've made the playoffs 2 of the last 3 years. That gives us hope that we can make the playoffs in 2021 and contend for a championship like we did in 2018. By doing that, by identifying your roster as that, I've heard you say this all week, Tommy, that you don't see them as a true contender for anything.
I don't.
And I agree with you. But they obviously have because they've positioned this with every move they've made from then till now to make a run at the playoffs in 2021.
That's why they're starting Dalton. It's exactly why they start Dalton, because they feel he gives them the best chance to accomplish that, Dan.
So it's the inability to identify mediocrity and the lack of ability to do anything about it if you have. And so the circle of suck continues, right? And so it just becomes super complex. By the way, I think we all sort of came into the season expecting this team to be 2-2 after 4 games, right? I think it was, they were going to go loss, win. And then we were going to get into this stretch at Raiders, Packers, at Buccaneers, 49ers, at Steelers, Ravens. That's just around the corner from here, guys. And that stretch is going to be very, very telling for who this team is. I think right now we know who this team is. They were 8-8 in 2019. They were 8-8 in 2020. They're 1-1 now. They're a team that beats lesser opponents, sometimes looks good doing it, sometimes doesn't, and then always gets exposed against teams that are legitimate contenders for actual things, right? And so I think we know who they are. I'm not sure they know who they are. And so this whole thing gets complicated, and now, oh, by the way, you're turning it loose the most valuable asset you have in the building right now, a rookie quarterback drafted number 11 who has all the potential to be a star, and you have this great outside worry that he is not going to be positioned for success because history tells you that they rarely position the quarterback and the organization to have sustained success.
Quick wrap up here, Dan. Let's get back to that question about Dalton. Matt Nagy meant what he said in minicamp, that Andy Dalton's a starter and Justin Fields had no chance to win the job. So when he says Andy Dalton is the starter when healthy, whether that's in a week, whether that's in 3 weeks, should we take him at his word?
So I'd like to know in the back of his mind whether this is an escape hatch in case Justin struggles to be able to say, well, Andy was our starter all along and he's healthy now, let's go back to him. Because the one other thing that Matt said today was, look, a lot can happen between now and the time that Andy is actually greenlit to play. And so because of that, Justin can go out here and prove to this coaching staff that he belongs to be the starter for this year, next year, and the 5 years beyond that. If he doesn't, they've got this escape hatch here, but I don't know what it's rooted in. And if it's rooted in trying to get to 10 victories this year to save your job, then you're absolutely aiming for the wrong things, as you mentioned at the outset of this, where your goal should be to develop the number 11 overall pick into a future championship-winning quarterback. And if you're trying to get Andy Dalton to play winning football so that you can win 10 games and get knocked out in the wild card round, then you're misguided with your approach.
Good stuff, Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
Great talking to you guys.
There you go. Always listen to Dan Weider here on ESPN 1000. You can read him in the Chicago Tribune. We want to continue to take your phone calls, 312-332-3776. Dan brought up a good point, and it's what you were most hot about, is what's the destination on this roadmap for 2021? Let's discuss that coming up next.
Miss a show? All your faves ready and waiting on the ESPN Chicago app.
You are listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
It's always been my basis for this year is what's the point of Andy Dalton? Like, if he does go back to him, what's the point? To what? What, like, how are you better as a team? Overall, big picture. You're not winning anything.
Their perspective is that he gives them the best chance to win. That's why
win,
he started.
But again, win what? Like, this is about, again, knowing and under why when layman fans or boobs on the radio like us know that being in the middle is the worst spot to be in any sport. You don't have a first-round pick next year either. That the most important thing is that you get this guy up and rolling and not going 9-8 when Andy Dalton's starting at the end of the season.
I can't get in their heads. They look at it differently than we do. Maybe, I mean, I have to believe that even they know in their minds that Justin Fields was going to be the quarterback for this team. It was a matter of when, not if. And when that time was going to be determined by them in their own brains, that I'm not 100% positive of. But I do feel pretty confident that they knew that at some point they were going to have to turn to him. Because at that point, he will have seen enough, witnessed enough, and will be more prepared to play from their perspective.
Mm-hmm. I would have, if I was at that press conference today, the one question about Deion asking, hey, is he ready, is a good question, because it's simple, and that's been always the point. Like Nagy's always said to us, we'll know when he's ready, you'll know when he's ready. He sort of hemmed and hawed at the beginning of that, and he said, well, he ended up saying, we'll see. I would have asked him, Matt, there's a reason you didn't want to play Justin at the beginning. There's a reason. Are you worried starting him earlier than you wanted is going to be a detriment to him? And then I would have been interested to hear what his answer would have been. Because if he doesn't think it's going to be a detriment to him, then why wasn't he starting from the outset?
Didn't he say at some point in meeting the press today that Justin is further ahead than he anticipated?
Yes, they've all said that. Yeah. Bill Lazor said that last week, too. Brad in Naperville, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Brad?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
We're good.
First time, long time.
Thank you. Boop, boop.
Can someone tell me what the hell is going on up at Hallis Hall?
Nope.
Why are we wasting our time with Andy Dalton?
Well, we're not now. I mean, look, Fields starts on Sunday, and he can make it really easy for everybody.
Correct. But the fact that Nagy said, well, when he's healthy, he's our starter. Starter for what? What is the point? It makes no sense. Fields had those two false starts. Well, he got those because he's not taking any reps in practice. So
I don't know that you tie that straight to not getting reps in practice. I mean, that happens because you're not used to the situation, and those things will go away in time.
But shouldn't those things be ironed out by a coaching staff?
Yeah, but you're not going to be able to create that same thing in practice. Like, those are the same way that interception is going to happen. That can't just happen in practice. That has to happen in a game, and you learn from it, and you don't dwell on it. Like, these are all learning moments from him that I don't necessarily believe you can mimic in practice. These are learned things that you only get by playing.
Okay, I agree with that. But for every rep that Dalton gets is a rep that Fields is not getting.
Of course.
True?
That's always been my motto too, Brad. Put all your resources into getting him ready and to getting this process on.
Which is great, but truly the only way you learn is to go out there and do it.
Right. By getting every rep, you're preparing to play.
Right.
And then instead of running a scout team offense and pretending that you're Joe Burrow, you're running your offense and being Justin Fields, starting quarterback of the Bears. And then you start on Sunday and you learn by doing. Let's go to Angel in Humboldt Park. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Angel?
What's up, guys? How you guys doing?
We're fantastic.
Well, I think what I would consider a success for this season would be if we see Justin Fields develop. You know, defense might be having an off game, and he can take this team on his back and win some games. That's going to be a success, whether they win 5, 6, 7, 8 games, whatever the case may be. I'm just hoping we see some good development, some good explosiveness, some excitement from Justin Fields. And like I said, you know, if he can win some games for us, that's big, because we haven't had a a quarterback, you know, developed in that way here in Chicago for, what, since forever. So that was that is what I would consider a success.
Thanks, Angel.
I think your eyes are going to determine success or failure more than a stat sheet or even your wins and loss record.
Absolutely. You know, here's another tangible way. Well, maybe this isn't quite tangible. But do you know how, like with Mitch, we still had the guys who said Mitch couldn't play versus the truthers. With Cutler, we had the Cuddlers versus the Jaders. I want, at the end of the year, basically to have most Bears fans, because it's impossible to get 100%, just in their mind knowing that we got the right guy. Okay, if he's not Lamar Jackson, if he's not Justin Herbert, if he's not Kyler Murray, after the first year.
Well, I'm not going to worry about people that are.
Well, but he makes it where, by the eye test, even dummies know, hey, we got our guy.
Well, they're going to be, I know what you're saying. As long as it appears that way to you, that's all that matters.
I just wanted to.
I don't need the masses following me.
All right. Jeremy and Wheeling here on ESPN 1000. What's up, Jer?
How you guys doing?
We're good.
All right, so I think for me, like, a successful season would be seeing Nagy finally change his playbook, whether that means he's the play caller or Lazar's the play caller. Take, for example, when we were first in goal and we had, what, three downs to get the ball in the end zone. It was, I think we were on the 9 or 6, whatever yard line, and Nagy decided to throw the ball. He ran it with Montgomery. They went to the right. And then he decided to throw the ball for second and third down. One of them was right at, you know, the edge going out of bounds, and they ended up calling, I think it was Mooney, they call him out of bounds. But why didn't we run the ball there? You saw that when they ended the game, Fields took that run for whatever, 11 yards, and then Montgomery had another run where he was, like, on his back, pushing 4 or 5 defenders with him and pedaling backwards. Why didn't they run the ball on that play? I just don't understand what the decision making is behind that.
The other thing
I have a question for you. I think everybody should watch. I actually watched it yesterday. Dan Orlovsky had like a 3-minute video of his grade for Justin Fields, and I think every Bears fan should watch. It was really detailed. And I think that's what we should all be looking at, not big picture, you know, game by game, because we know that the Bears aren't going to probably go to the Super Bowl this year. We weren't planning on seeing Fields in the third week of the season. So that's what I had to share.
The Orlovsky video was him going through every one of his throws.
But there's no film to it. It's just him on camera telling you how he graded.
Of the 13 attempts, of the 13, were they accurate? Of the 13... What, like, did he have his mechanics right?
Stuff like that.
Yeah, all that stuff.
It's just funny. I mean, like, there's a group out there that doesn't agree with anything he says, but now because he's saying nice things about Justin Fields, all of a sudden he's the... Whatever. To get back to his question, I just want it to look right. Like, you're talking about, you're mad they didn't run it down there. The skinny post for 6, Andy Dalton to Allen Robinson looked okay to me. Like, that made sense to me. Get in the end zone and find a way to make a play.
Get in the end zone more.
Like again, they got in the red zone. The first drive, was it the first drive?
Yeah.
And it made sense. And Andy Dalton recognized Allen Robinson on a skinny post, and they scored.
And they were marching on the second drive when Dalton hurt himself.
Right.
He picked up
so,
a first down.
Like, it made sense to me. Like, there are other times when I look at it and I go, no, it doesn't make sense to me. So I can't sit here and say, you have to run it when you get in the red zone. No, put together a plan, a well-thought-out plan that takes advantage of some of the good things that you do and get the ball in the end zone.
All right, we've got Waddle's World coming up. And don't forget, Friday, it's going to be a fantastic festive football Friday. And we're going to be at Kenny's Irish Pub in Countryside. Countryside is the place to be. We'll be there September 24th, this Friday, at 917 West 55th Street in Countryside. We've been at Kenny's Irish Pub before. We're going to welcome you, roll out the red carpet for you, drink ice cold Miller Lite. We'll have some great giveaways. Carmen's going to join us in person as well, talking Bears, talking NFL, hopefully a White Sox clinch by then. White Sox game today.
I got a White Sox clinch going right now. I'm a little nervous.
Okay. It should have been a game today, but it was postponed till Monday. So they're off to Cleveland now for tomorrow's doubleheader. All right. Waddle's World is coming up next.
This is Waddle and Sylvie, Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Silva and at ESPN_Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000. This is Waddle's World.
And in Chicago, Tom Waddle. He can't run, he's not fast, but he gets open.
Bears legend.
Amazing.
9 career TDs in the NFL.
He caught everything that was thrown and took every hit that they could give him.
Tom Waddle.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
It's time to find out what's on Tom's mind.
Is that why you are here?
As we go inside Waddle's World.
Yeah, welcome in. Nice and warm in here. Waddle's World brought to you by our great partners at Wintrust Community Banks. They are Chicago's banks. Find your nearest Wintrust Community Bank. Visit Wintrust.com/find us. Member FDIC. Just a couple of quick stories for you before we get back to the phones. I think it's more important to spend our time, even during Waddle's World, before we get to the poop stories after the next break.
Make your phone calls
some poop stories coming up at 3:45.
First, we're taking your requests.
We're going to take your calls first. But yes, you brought this to my attention. I believe the full list of nominees for the Pro Football Hall of Fame Class 2022 are out.
Mm-hmm.
And that list obviously includes
Olin Krutz.
Yes.
It includes Lance Briggs.
Yes.
It includes Peanut Tillman.
I think all of them were on the list last year, correct?
And then this year, the first year,
he is eligible. Kick returner, Devin Hester.
Devin Hester, let's load the buses up for Keno.
Here we go.
Take that.
I think he's going to be a first.
You think so?
I don't know. Maybe not.
I think he won't be.
Second ballot, second year?
I think they're gonna snob him in the
snobby?
First. Yeah, they're gonna snob him.
Give him
and
a
say,
snobber,
and not on the first time. You'll get in on the second. You'll have to wait a little bit. How long did Richard Dent wait? Like
that's a good
seven
question.
Or 8 years?
Did he really?
Did Dan Hampton have to wait several years? Think about some of those guys that we would
Jimbo
think,
just got in. I mean,
and that was by the Veterans Committee,
yeah.
Right?
Like, Steve Smith's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Anquan Boldin, probably the same. Will Andre Johnson, those are the wide receivers that are, I don't know.
He's got to go in too, doesn't he?
At some point, yeah. First year eligibles are Boldin, Devin Hester, Andre Johnson, Steve Smith. Those are the receivers. Offensive lineman Jake Long and Nick Mangold, I don't believe they'll go in. Defensive back Antonio Cromartie. I would put Peanut in before I'd put Antonio Cromartie in.
Peanut deserves to be in. And again, like,
I think
when you revolutionize a move that is now common in the NFL with the peanut punch.
Well, his stats on that stuff are just ridiculously impressive. I think if you, like, look, we have a healthy respect for all of the guys on that defense. Lance Briggs was fantastic. And on the other side of the ball, Olin Krutz was a fabulous player as well. But if you take Lance, Krutz, and Peanut, and you have to evaluate the guy that's probably got the best chance of going in, it's Peanut, isn't it?
I believe so.
It probably goes Peanut, Olin, and then Lance, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
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 I mean,
yeah. Easily.
Yeah.
I think so. And then I'm not diminishing.
No, they're all fantastic players, but I don't think you're going to get everybody in from that same group.
I forgot what I was watching. Maybe it was Hard Knocks. I was watching one football practice that behind the scenes, mm-hmm. and they were actually putting boxing gloves on the players to practice the ball punch drill.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, I mean, Peanut was really the peanut punch. I mean, look, everyone has always tried to strip the ball.
Yeah.
Peanut made it an art form he would punch the ball out.
And it wasn't just the fact that it was an art form. It was that it was such a successful move.
Yeah,
like, it's not like, hey, look, he's the first guy that ever did this and he created 7 fumbles. He's the first guy that really kind of did it in this manner and created like 50 fumbles.
Right, right.
Like, I mean,
Sure.
So, anyway, Devin Hester, a first-year eligible participant.
And by the way, Tillman could cover, too.
Oh, you no doubt. I mean? Yeah, like, of course.
Like, so when you make, when you look.
I don't want to minimize that.
I'm not saying you're doing that. I'm saying not only was he a fantastic corner, but he basically changed the way a cornerback plays with run support, with the way he forced turnovers at a linebacker safety type wave.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine.
I always tell you this. One of my favorite stats is take a look at Ray Lewis's forced turnovers take a look at Pina Tillman's forced turnovers. Ray Lewis was probably the most dominant defensive player of his era. And compare it to the forced fumbles of a Pina Tillman. I mean, and that should tell you right there.
He forced, Peanut Tillman forced 44 fumbles in his career and also had 38 interceptions.
And I want to say, like, Ray Lewis had, like, 25 forced fumbles.
So I said 42, right? Did I say 42? Yeah. Okay, I'm going to give you Ray Lewis's
fumbles.
He's
the most fearsome defensive player of
forced fumbles,
era.
19.
19.
19 forced fumbles.
So 2.5 times the amount Pina Tillman has of the most dominant defensive player of that era.
It's crazy, crazy stat. We wish them all the best. I mean, because they were all magnificent players. But I think Hester gets in. I probably doesn't get in. I don't think he gets in first ballot.
I don't think he gets in first ballot. I think they'll make him wait a little bit. I think he will get in.
Yeah. And today, I believe it was 14 years ago today, arguably one of the better football rants you'll ever hear.
Well, I don't know if I judge rants correctly anymore since we've been with Black and Abdallah because they have always sort of dismissed the Lee Ilya rant. So I want to play it, and then I want to get their review on this, if it stood the test of time.
This one from 14 years ago. Right. It's Mike Gundy.
You and I were just a young show. Yeah. We were in its first year of existence right here on ESPN 1000, and this happened, and then you told us the story how you and Mike Gundy played college football at the same time.
Same time, and I always used to, I'd wake up in the morning on Sunday, and I'd check the newspaper to see how many catches Hartley Dykes had from Mike Gundy because I had this own personal little, you know, competition with where I was going to stack up in the receptions leader list every year. I think I ended up sixth.
And country Tom Waddle would talk like Mike Gundy talks now.
You're right.
You know, you've lost the accent. But also, too, you used to then always yell out after this rant, I'm a man, I'm 40, because you're the same age as Mike Gundy.
That's correct.
So this is 14 years ago today.
If anybody hasn't read this article, I don't read it. This was brought to me by a mother of children. I think this is worth
reading. Children.
Let me tell you why I'm talking about this article. Three-fourths of this is inaccurate. It's fiction. And this article embarrasses me to be involved with athletics tremendously. And that article had to have been written by a person that doesn't have a child and has never had a child that's had their heart broken and come home upset.
So good.
And had to deal with the child when he is upset and kick a person when he's down. Here's all that kid did. He goes to class. He's respectful to the media. He's respectful to the public. And he's a good kid. And he's not a professional athlete. And he doesn't deserve to be kicked when he's down. If you have a child someday, you'll understand how it feels. But you obviously don't have a child. I do. If your child goes down the street and somebody makes fun of him because he dropped a pass in a pickup game or says he's fat and he comes home crying to his mom, you'd understand. But you didn't have that. But someday you will. And when your child comes home, you'll understand. If you want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, you go after one that doesn't do the right things. You don't downgrade him because he does everything right and may not play as well on Saturday. And you let us make that decision. That's why I don't read the newspaper. Because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage. Attacking an amateur athlete for doing everything right. And then you want to write articles about guys that don't do things right and downgrade them, the ones that do make plays. Are you kidding me? Where are we at in society today? Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm not a kid. Write something about me or our coaches. Don't write about a kid that does everything right, that's heart's broken, and then say that the coaches said he was scared That ain't true.
That ain't true.
We love that.
And then to say that we made that decision because Donovan Woods, because he threatened to transfer, that's not true.
Not true.
So get your facts straight. And I hope someday you have a child and somebody downgrades them and belittles them and you have to look them in the eye and say, you know what? It's okay. They're supposed to be mature adults, but they're really not. Who's the kid here? Who's the kid here? Are you kidding me? That's all I got to say.
That's it.
Makes me want to puke.
It was a great ending.
And then they all clap for him. Mike Gundy, college football coach and social worker.
See, it's like a song that builds up to the chorus.
Yeah.
Like, it's a slow build with some good stuff, and then you get to the really good chorus, and then at the end, that last note or that last drum beat
makes me want to puke.
Right, that's like that final big drum ending. Now, do you guys... You guys are...
There are college football experts as well.
But they have been known to look down on some of the rants that we like.
No, you guys, listen. Have you guys seen the picture of Randy Marsh in front of the computer? That's what it is on every Lee Elliott day. Yeah. You walk up to the seventh floor of 190 North State Street. It's ridiculous.
It's a big day.
It's not necessarily a critique on the rants. It's more of those who work around us. And who think that all these rants are so hot.
First of all,
that's it.
Hot.
Mike Gundy's a good football coach, though.
For going after the media and not the fans. The hard-working Americans that pay to see Cubs baseball. That's who Lee Elliott chose to go after that day. Not reporters. Not people paid to criticize the team. Not people who get paid for a living to talk about. You want to come after me?
Come after me!
I'm a producer and
a host. That ain't true!
I'm 36, okay? Not the fans, not the hardworking Americans that spend their money that get to go to one, maybe two games a year because it's expensive as hell.
85% of people work as a producer. The other 15% come out here.
The other 15% are on Twitch acting like it.
Yeah.
So is that a thumbs up or thumbs down for the Gundy thing?
I love the Gundy one. Right. It's great.
Whatever. All right. When we come back, how about a couple of poop stories and the nuttiest story of the day?
And more of your bearish calls. 332-3776.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie. Watch us and join the chat. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago on twitch.tv or the Twitch app.
Adam Abdallah, I know you like to do the do, as they say, right? You're a Mountain Dew guy?
We're going to have this Mountain Dew challenge at some point, aren't we? Like, you've got, like, a flaming hot Cheeto Mountain Dew.
I got all the Mountain Dew.
Yeah?
I have many flavors of it. It's just sitting in my apartment. My wife wants to know why I was buying Mountain Dew at a rogue gas station in Michigan.
Have you cracked the tab on any of them yet? Or are you waiting for the taste test?
No, why would I? I wouldn't do that on my own. That's for the group. That's for all of us to do. We're all gonna drink that battery acid together.
What was the inspiration saying that Mountain Dew and Flaming Hot Cheetos together would make a good flavor? Like, how do you get in a boardroom and decide that?
Someone's probably high, right?
What's going to get us clicks on the internet and people to talk about it and do Mountain Dew challenges on the radio?
Yeah, it's genius. Because they know idiots like us will actually give them free publicity.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, a man was charged with a felony under a three strikes law in Pennsylvania after police say he underpaid for Mountain Dew. So I'm hoping that you didn't have this same problem.
What do you mean he underpaid?
No, Mike was not in Pennsylvania. He was probably in Wisconsin. A Pennsylvania man was jailed after he was accused of underpaying for a bottle of the Dew. Police say Joseph Sobolewski stopped at a convenience store in East Central Pennsylvania last month. The store had a promotion where two 20-ounce Mountain Dew bottles cost $3. He grabbed one bottle, put $2 on the counter of the store, and he left. But a single bottle cost $2.29 plus tax, not the expected $1.50, so he actually didn't overpay as he may have assumed. Police and store workers say he underpaid by 29 cents plus tax for a total of 43 cents.
Wait, what? That's what we're using our resources on now?
Store employees called the police who found Sobolewski and charged him with a felony. He was sent to jail on a $50,000 cash-only bond facing up to seven years in prison.
This is not true.
The bond was changed 7 days later to a $50,000 unsecured bond, according to court documents.
Wait a minute.
Why such a high penalty for shorting a store less than 50 cents, you ask?
Isn't there other crime to fight other than a guy who underpaid by 29 cents?
He was being charged under the state's three strikes law for retail theft. He was convicted more than a decade ago for pumping gas without paying. He was also arrested and sentenced for stealing shoes from a Kmart. The shoes cost $39.99. He paid $866 in fines and fees and was sentenced to 3 months in jail for a probation violation.
Mama needs a new pair of shoes. Look, I don't know. Those are not right. But the 29 cents creates, you call the cops.
Do you know how much the state of Pennsylvania is going to have to pay to actually keep him incarcerated?
A lot more than 58 cents or whatever it is. 29 cents. 29 cents.
We should do the Dew Challenge one day next week.
Good. I'm in.
All right.
Are you sure?
Yeah. What do you mean? Is it like really spicy?
We don't know. We haven't tried it. I got like six cans of it.
It could be. Nothing could ever top that wing that we had.
Oh, it's not going to be like that spicy.
It just sounds
like a weird combination.
Yeah. Anyway, you want to hear the nuttiest story of the day? Brought to you by Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey, A Night with Screwball.
And it's bound to get a little bit nutty.
Teen gets USB cable stuck in his penis in a backfired attempt to measure himself.
I'm trying to charge this thing.
And you wondered whether or not the Mountain Dew story was the nuttiest story of the day. Au contraire. A UK teen had to undergo emergency surgery after an attempt to measure himself resulted in him getting a USB cable lodged in his urethra.
What do you mean measuring?
The fiasco reportedly began after an unnamed 15-year-old was triggered by sexual curiosity and inserted a USB cord into his urethra.
Did I have rulers over there?
The sex experiment.
The metric system?
Get it? The sex experiment backfired when the cable became lodged in the curious teen's scrotum like an electronic catheter. Right. Despite attempts to extract it himself, the cord became tangled so terribly that both ends were left hanging out of his thing.
Like Abdallah says, like, what are you using iPhone cord?
What that sounds like, you ever see the people that can take the cherry stem and tie it with their tongue?
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like he was trying to do in there.
I think
that's entirely different. But I don't think so.
He has both ends sticking out?
Yeah.
I think he used that as an excuse. I was measuring it when obviously there was some other stuff
going
on.
I'm definitely nauseous, just like queasy just thinking about this. Like, it is.
It made my stomach turn, too.
That is.
Could use some.
I don't know that I've ever used a USB cord to measure anything.
No.
Much less
that's
something
what
that
he was trying to get a charge out of something.
Yeah.
All right, 332-3776. More of your phone calls.
Nuttiest story of the day, right there.
And you could have seen the faces that we made during the nuttiest story of the day if you were watching and following us on Twitch. You can follow us on twitch.tv or download that Twitch app. And our channel is ESPN 1000 Chicago. Make sure you go there and then you follow us, can watch us live and join the chat. It's all brought to you by Pinehurst Resort. Also, one of our great teammates raising a lot of money for people in Chicago. We want to tell you about that coming up in 2 short minutes.